Okay, terrific. So tonight we are on Kapitel Ayin Ches 78, which is a very long kapitel. It has 72 pesukim in it, and it contains, once again, it's written by Asaph. We're still in the middle of a series of kapitelach from Asaph that David HaMelech saw fit to include. Asaph was a Levi and also was a Navi. And the purpose of this kapitel is for Asaph to reinforce that Hashem has selected David to be king over Klal Yisrael forever. And he's going to take a little bit of an interesting approach here. He's going to review history from the time of Egypt until the time of David HaMelech. Now, when I say review history, not as a historian would do it, but as a writer of Tehillim would do it. We're going to just jump right in here because there's a lot to it. I'm going to be doing this for a few weeks, so let's get started. In Pasuk Aleph, verse 1, it says, Maskil la'asav. This is a maskil, an instructory kapitel by Asaph. Hazina ami, torasi. Give ear and listen, my people, to my Torah. Hatu oznechem le'imri fi. And lean your ears to the words of my mouth. So, Hazanti Ami Torasi, listen my nation to my Torah. The Al-Sheikh says that what that means is listen to the Torah, study the Torah, and see the kindness given to those who follow it, and the punishment given to those who do not. And that's what the study of history is all about. You know, by the world at large, in the secular world, history is something where you examine the past, complete with its ups, its downs, its good points, along with its warts and its foibles, etc. But interestingly enough, you don't see that kind of history in Jewish people, because there's no exemption from the laws of Lashon Hara or other things like that that would enable one to write a history book that would point out anything that anybody did wrong. The only purpose for the study of history, as far as the Jewish perspective is concerned, is what the Al-Sheikh is saying, and that is to see what happened in the past and how we can learn something from it. Now, in the Torah, we often find that the Torah does bring down faults and things that people did wrong, because Hashem is specifically putting that in there in order to teach us something. The same thing with the Navi. But for example, if one were to write a history book today, one would not be able to write the kind of history book that's popular in the secular world, because one couldn't write anything negative. One would only be able to write positive things. And what would there be, the lessons in it? Your history book would end up being about two paragraphs long, because you'd have to only look for things which were meant to teach a lesson to everybody else and weren't negative. Yes?
I always heard, though, that the Jewish history is different than secular history, because in secular history they always tell the good parts about what they did. They never tell, like, the mistakes.
In the Chumash and in the Nach, where Hashem is telling you what to write, right, that's true. So, for example, if you were to pull out an ancient Babylonian history text, it would tell only the good, great things that their people did. And any time their ruler made a mistake, that would not be recorded. You don't see Ahasuerus or the king of Persia or any, or going all the way back to, you know, whoever, you don't see them writing down all of their failures. However, since Jewish history has a purpose of teaching us something, if there's a point to it or a lesson to it, then even if it's negative about the person, Hashem will have it put into the Chumash or put into the Navi in order to teach us a lesson. So anything that's meant to teach us a lesson or that we should learn something from is considered to be a good thing. Yes?
The Hazina. Why is it singular feminine? Hatu is plural, but shouldn't it be Hazino? Is that poetic license?
Ah, good question. Good question. So the Mefarshim say that Hazina Ami Torasi, listen to my Torah, is one, refers to the written Torah. Whereas Hatu Aznechem Le'imrei Fi, but bend your ears to the words of my mouth, that's referring to the Torah Shebaal Peh, which has many different facets and many different, and we continue to study and expound the Torah Shebaal Peh, whereas the written Torah is a frozen in time text. So Hazina Ami, my people, listen, the whole people, to Torasi, to the Torah. Hatu Aznechem, and lend your ears, all of you, lend your ears and try and understand Imre Fi, the words of my mouth. Meaning the Torah Shebaal Peh. And that's why the difference. Because he goes on to say, we'll come back in a second. But he goes on to say, Eftachav Mashal Pi. I'm going to open my mouth with a mashal. Abi Echidos Mini Kedim. I'm going to express riddles from the beginning of time. So he's saying, I'm going to express a mashal, a parable. And that's referring to the Torah itself. And when he says the riddles that I'm going to teach you, means that the history of the world is often couched in riddles. If you study history, a lot of it seems to be confusing at first glance. And that's why he calls them riddles. That history can look at like riddles. For example, if one were to study Tanakh, and let's say one were to study Shmuel Beis and Shmuel Aleph without the explanation of Chazal, it's very confusing. What is David doing? What is Shaul doing? Why are these people doing what they're doing? It's very confusing, the simple study of history. However, it seems like a riddle without a more detailed explanation. So he calls them chidos. I'm going to express riddles. And he calls history riddles. But he calls the Torah a mashal, which doesn't seem to be a good expression for the Torah. But we do find that one other place. And what he means by that is as follows, is that the Torah is a mashal, says Rashi, because it's a parable. Everything in the Torah is eternal and truthful, yet couched in very simple sounding stories. Now you can learn Torah in kindergarten, and you learn the story of Avraham Avinu, and you learn the story of Yitzchak, and you learn the story of Yaakov, and you think you understand it pretty good, right, on the level of a kindergartner. And then as you get older and older, you can understand it on a deeper and deeper level. So he calls the Torah a mashal because everything is explained in things that can seemingly be very simple stories. Now, this is one of the big problems that Hiruv organizations have. They go out to people and they say, listen, I want to tell you all about the Torah. You say, oh, I learned all about that when I was a little kid. Abraham did this and this and this. And their understanding of the Torah is like a kindergartner's. I remember one guy telling me that when he was in first grade kindergarten, they learned that Avraham Avinu's tent had four doors, a door on each side, that everybody, guests could always get in. So he pictured everybody driving their cars in from all different sides, right? And he says, to this day, like 50 years old, right? When he reads that, he thinks of people driving their cars in. He can't get that out of his mind from when he was in kindergarten or first grade. So the Torah, he says, can be a mashal. And history is a riddle. Only with further understanding can a person come to appreciate what it's really telling you. Otherwise, it's a simple mashal that you can teach to a kindergartner, and you read the history, and it seems like he does. It seems riddles. So I'm going to tell you parables, he says, and I'm going to tell you riddles. I share shemanu v'neidam, that we heard and we knew them. We've heard these and we know them, bavosenu sipurlanu, and our fathers have told them to us. So now all the things that we've been told from our Masorah, from our fathers and grandfathers and great-grandfathers, all of these seemingly riddles and seemingly simple stories, he's going to explain the more complex meanings to them. He's going to eftachah, he's going to open his mouth, and he's going to explain the mashal, and he's going to explain the chidos that we've heard from Avosenu Zibra, and that our forefathers told us. Now this idea of our forefathers telling us our tradition and our history and our Masorah is really a foundation of Emunah. It's an absolute bedrock foundation of Emunah that there's a chain of transmission going all the way back to the Avos in an unbroken chain. But even with that, he says, it can still seem like simple stories. It can still seem like, what is David HaMelech? What is Shaul HaMelech? What is going on here? Why are they doing this? It doesn't seem like Shaul HaMelech is being such a nice guy. Why is he doing this? Maybe David, it doesn't make any sense. So I'm going to explain to you. V'lo nechaneid mibneihem. We're not going to hide from their sons, Lador Acharon, to the last generation, Misaprim, Tehilos Hashem, Ve'ezuzo v'niplosav, that they will recite the praises and wonders of Hashem, Asher Asa, and everything that he did. Now he's saying a very important point here, and it's almost like he's brushing it, it seems like he's brushing it over because we're sort of in the introductory verses here, but he's really bringing up a very important point. It's critical that in order to continue the Masorah, people teach their children that which was handed down to them. But it's even more, it's not even more, but it's also equally as important that people assist others who do not know of the Masorah in making sure that it's transmitted to their children. That sentence came out a little muddy, but what I mean by that is as follows. A lot of times, Kiruv organizations, it seems like the purpose of them going out and explaining to someone who never had a Torah education and who grew up far from a Jewish environment, that they would like this person to come and learn about Torah and to do mitzvahs. That's true. But there also is a critical, important thing, is that the continuation of the Masorah to the next generation and them telling over their children is really the underlying purpose of all outreach. And all everything that we do has to be oriented towards continuing the Masorah and making sure that the next generation has the Masorah transmitted from us. And that's what he says. We're not going to hide from their sons to the very last generation. As long as there are people, we're going to recite the praises of Hashem, His might and His wonders, which He performed. Vayakam Edus, and Hashem made Edus, we'll see what that is in a minute, B'Yakov with Yakov, V'Tayra Sham B'Yisrael, and He put a Torah in Israel, we'll see what that means, Acher Siva Esavoseinu Lehodiyam Livneihem, and He commanded our forefathers to make them known to their sons. So He established an Edus in Yakov, and a Torah in Israel. So, the Ibn Ezra says that edus are the laws that that you would seem to understand and make sense and say, yeah, that makes perfect sense. Thou shalt not murder. Most people don't have a real hard time wrapping their mind around that one. Right? As opposed to the chuk, the chokim, which we don't understand why there's a red heifer. But the edus, the Ibn Ezra says, are those logical laws that we could understand. But the Malbim says something just beautiful. He says, you know what Edus means? He says, it's the stories for the masses. A lot of times, whenever we want to refer to the masses of Klal Yisrael, we call them Yaakov. I set down stories, Edus, parables, things in the Torah for Yaakov, for everybody to understand. The Torah, Sham Yisrael. Sam Yisrael. And Torah, I gave to Yisrael. The further study and the further understanding of the Torah, I gave to those people who wish to be called Yisrael. Yaakov is like the masses that have the parables and the stories and they understand that. You know, there are a lot of people that go through their whole life and they keep that understanding that Avraham Avinu's cars were driving in all sides of the parking lot there. They do mitzvahs their whole lives, and they're fine, upstanding individuals. But Torah Sam Yisrael, for those people who want to understand more, give them a Torah. You have to relearn the Torah as an adult. This is where an educational system, we have a great educational system, we teach the kids all these things, and they become adults. And what happens? They stop, and they're stuck with some of that understanding. And they still think of a lot of things in that same sort of simplistic way. The entire Torah, everything that you learned as a child, has to be relearned as an adult. Now he's also pointing out that I gave it to Yaakov. Now, we don't do mitzvahs because Yaakov said to. We do mitzvahs because we were commanded to do so and receive the Torah at Har Sinai. We don't keep mitzvahs because of the Avos. But our tradition goes back to the Avos, especially Yaakov. Because Yaakov was the one who gave over to all the Shvatim and really cemented the ongoing continuation of Yiddishkeit as a nation. But even though our tradition goes back to the Avos, we don't keep any mitzvahs because the Avos do. We do not have Bris Milah because of Rama Avinu did Bris Milah. We have a Bris Milah because Hashem told us to at Har Sinai. Just because the Avos did something is not a reason why we do it. However, we just saw in Parshas Toldos that the Avos kept Tola Kola Torah Kula. It says in Chumashem, I just read this, and this is the pasuk that Chazal use to tell us that that the Avos, even though there had been no commandments yet, there had been no Har Sinai, there's no physical Torah, there's no actual written down commandments, the Avos nonetheless kept all of the commandments. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Only the Avos kept Kol HaTorah Kula. And here we have in Toldos, which we just read. And it says in... It says... Ekev Asher Shama Avraham Bekoli. Avraham listened to my voice. Vayishmor. And he guarded Mishmarti. He guarded my mishmor, mitzvaisai, my mitzvais, chukaisai, my chukos, v'torasai. Right, so he was yishmor, mishmarti, mitzvaisai, chukaisai, v'torasai. Five things that that Hashem says of Ram Avinu did and guarded for him. Those things correspond to Kol HaTorah Kula. Rashi says that Shema Bekol, he listened to my voice when I tested him by the Akedah. Mishmares, which is Mishmarti, it refers to all of the rabbinic laws, all of the laws that Chazal will enact in the future, Avram Avinu obeyed now. The mitzvosai, the mitzvahs, are the logical and ethical laws of the Torah, the edus we were talking about, the things that you could maybe figure out yourself. The chukos, right, chukosai he kept, are the Torah laws that have no apparent reason. And finally, the tyrosai, the tyros that he kept, is the Torah Shebal Peh and Halacha L'Moshe Misinai. According to Rashi, Shema Bekol, the Mishmeret, the Mitzvah, the chukos, and the tyros are the five different things that Avraham Avinu and the Avos kept. They kept the rabbinic laws, they kept the logical and ethical laws of the Torah, they kept the Torah laws that have no apparent reason, and they kept the oral law and the Halacha L'Moshe Misinai, even though there was no Torah given yet. Now the Ramban on here seems to stop just short of saying that the Avos also kept all of the oral law and the Halacha L'Moshe Misinai. He certainly agrees on the other things. He seems to stop a little bit short of saying that every particular oral law and every particular Halacha L'Moshe Misinai the Avos kept. But nonetheless, even without that, they still kept all of the gezeros, all of the fences that Chazal made, and all of the written laws of the Torah, and to some extent, either completely or maybe not completely, it's not clear, they kept the oral law and the Halacha L'Moshe Misinai. So when we have a tradition that goes back to the Avos, it's not just a tradition that it's a nice thing to be Jewish, that there's one God, etc., etc. The Avos literally kept every mitzvah. Now, we don't keep the mitzvahs for that reason, though. We only keep the mitzvahs because we're commanded to. Because then he says, Asher Tziva, Hashem commanded us, as Avoseinu, Lahodiyam Livneim. He commanded us. Had he not commanded us, it would be very nice. The Avos did all these wonderful mitzvos, but it would not be incumbent upon us to do them. And he says, Lahodiyam livnehem, in order to make them known to their sons. It seems like he's going a little far here. If he said, you know what, he gave us the Edus, and then the more advanced study for Yisrael, and he commanded to our forefathers, that would have been enough. It says, Lahodiyam livnehem, to make known to their sons. Because once again, he's emphasizing that fact of the continuation of the Masorah. Why is it that there's a mitzvah in the Torah at all to make, to give all this information over, to tell everything over to your children? You should just teach your children to do mitzvahs. Teach your children that, you know what, before you eat something, you make a bracha. And Shabbos, you don't turn on the light. Why do you have to tell them all of this stuff about the Masorah? Why do you have to tell them everything that happened? Why do you have to go over and over this? This is saying that in order for the Masorah to be successful, Hashem gave us not only the mitzvahs to do, but a mitzvah to give over those traditions and to tell them to the next generation, because faith, emunah, combined with actions of doing mitzvahs is what continues the tradition. It's not enough just to teach the children to do something, and it's not enough just to tell them have emunah and Hashem. They have to have both. And in order to have both, Hashem says, do the mitzvahs, teach your children to do the mitzvahs also, and by the way, you have to tell them all these things. And the combination of what we were commanded to do and making known to the sons will produce a strong Masorah. And why should that we be doing that? In Pasuk Vav, Leman Yedu, Dor Acharon Bonim Yivaledu, in order the last generation might know, Atum will be Sapur Livnehem, sons who will be born should tell their sons. That this will go on forever and ever. There's no end to the Masorah. It will go on for all time. V'yasimu ve'elukim kislam, and they should put their hope in Hashem, v'lo yishkechu, and not forget about Hashem, ma'alei keil mitzvoisav yitzorhu, and keep His commandments. If they don't have emunah, the mitzvahs will drop by the wayside. Look what happened to the immigrants that came to America in the 1880s, 1890s from Eastern Europe. They did mitzvahs. They knew little. Their emunah was not strong. All they knew was to do mitzvahs. This is what you're supposed to do. On Shabbat, you don't turn on the lights. That's what they knew. They came and they faced new challenges. And it wasn't enough, just the practice of mitzvahs by itself. They didn't have the strong emunah that they needed in order to see themselves through. Only with those two things together will they not forget the deeds of Hashem and keep His commandments. It's not enough to have emunah either. There were some of those generation, early generation in America, that they had emunah. They used to go to shul on Shabbos morning and go to work afterwards. And what happened to their children? Children assimilated as quick as you can, a blink of an eye. And they said, but we had emunah. You did, but you can't pass on emunah or mitzvahs by themselves. You can only pass on a whole package. Asaf is trying to make an introductory point here that isn't made often enough, in my opinion, and that is that mitzvahs and emunah have to be passed on to the next generation as a package. You can't just have emunah, just have mitzvahs, it's not enough. You have to pass it on as a package. And if we turn the page in Pasuk Ches, in verse 8, he's going to say, V'lo yiyu k'avoysam. And I don't want them to be like their forefathers. Dor sorer umoyer, a stubborn and rebellious generation. Dor lo heichin libo, they did not prepare their heart. V'lo nemna as kel rucho, and they did not remain faithful to Hashem. Now who is he talking about? He's talking about the generation that was in Mitzrayim and left Mitzrayim and went into the Midbar. This is one of the reasons you have to relearn these things as an adult. Because if you go through the Chumash, these people saw incredible nisim, incredible miracles, on a daily, hourly basis. But it never, never really tamed their stubbornness. They always had a desire to rebel. Soon as something goes wrong, someone's got an idea they're going to rebel. That stubbornness never went away. They had a very high degree of emunah. I mean, they followed Moshe Rabbeinu out into the Midbar. Yet they had a hard time not acting up like bratty children. And in fact, that's almost what the relationship could be described as. The children are following their parents because they know that the parents know what they're doing, but darn if they don't just keep acting up. So that generation that was in the desert, by learning Torah and doing mitzvahs after they got the Torah, it eventually tamed their rebelliousness. But they didn't prepare their heart properly, he said. The spirit was not faithful to Hashem. Chazal tell us that at the Yam Suf, the lowest servant in Klal Yisrael had a nevuah, a prophecy, and a vision of Hashem greater than the prophet Yechezkel. Yet they still, the slightest thing went wrong. Oh, it's been 41 days and Moshe Rabbeinu is supposed to be back? Whoops. Let's make a golden calf. So I saw a very interesting, the Before Shem all asked, how is it possible that for people that stood by Kriyas Yam Suf to fall so far? And there's a lot of different explanations. And also one beautiful explanation. I want to say it was a Ramban, but I am hesitant to say that. It was a number of years ago, and he says, you know what it's teaching you? Don't make any big drushes here. What it's teaching you is, yeah, it's possible. It's possible for a person to climb great heights, and then it's possible for a person to fall to great depths. That's the nature of people. If you're not vigilant all the time, the fact that last week you were on great heights, it's not going to do anything for you this week. B'nei Ephraim Noshke Rome Kashes Chafku B'yom Kerav. The sons of Ephraim, armed archers, retreated on the day of battle. Lo Shamru Bris Elokim. They didn't keep the covenant of Hashem. Uvesayraso Me'ana Lelechas. And they refused to follow his Torah. We're ready for our first history lesson. What in the world is he talking about here? He's talking about Shevet Ephraim. And Shevet Ephraim was the Shevet of Yosef HaTzadik. Now Yosef, of course, had been the Mishnah Lemelech. He'd been the second in charge after Paro. And the Shevet of Ephraim always felt a little bit, I don't want to say haughty, but a little bit like we're royalty. We're from the tribe of Yosef, and we pretty much destined to keep things going here because, you know, we're from the tribe of Yosef. And a little bit of an edge to them about the fact that they were from the tribe of Yosef. Now, after Yosef had already passed away, there was a Jew from the tribe of Ephraim named Yagnon. How many people know the story of Yagnon? The story of Yagnon is what he's talking about here about the sons of Ephraim. Now, we had a tradition that within 400 years from the birth of Yitzchak, we'll come out of Egypt. However, Yagnon said, you know what? Nah, you guys aren't counting it right. You're really supposed to count from the Bris Bein HaBesarim, which was 30 years earlier, and you guys really don't know what you're doing. You don't have the right tradition here. He said, listen, 180 years have already passed. We're not going to wait anymore. We're strong enough to take this matter into our own hands. We're going to free ourselves, and we're going to go and we're going to capture the land promised to our forefathers. Yagnon was the first person to not study history. Hashem had told them, when it's time, I will redeem you. Hashem is not redeeming them, thus it's not time. But Yagnon wanted to take matters into its own hands. So the older people, the people who were wiser, said, you know what, if he's such a big hotshot, and he believes that Hashem is telling him now he should leave, then you know what, he should believe what Hashem said, that we should wait and Hashem will set us free. So Yagna was seemed a little bit contradictory. He's saying, well, Hashem said that we were going to go free, but he wants us now to take matters into our own hands. It's not really However, the tribe of Ephraim, outside of the tribe of Ephraim, people paid him no mind. There's always a rabble-rouser here or there. But amongst the tribe of Ephraim, Yagnon was a pretty fierce, fiery orator. And among the tribe of Ephraim, he found people to follow him. Because Ephraim felt, you know what, we're warriors, we're descended from Yosef, we're royalty, you know what, it is about time we took matters into our own hands. So they armed themselves with swords and bows and arrows, and they got up and they marched out of Egypt. Now Paro is not one to take this lying down. Paro sent his armies after them. A fierce battle ensued. Now, and there's a little bit of unclarity as to exactly what happened in this battle. The Medrash, one of the Medrashim says that they actually got away after this first battle and managed to survive. However, they had no food with them. They brought gold and silver and things, and they were going to buy food on the way. So they went through the land of the Plishtim. If you look on your map, you'll see that land of Plishtim is right next to Eretz Israel. They've got to the border of the Plishtim. And there near the town of Gass, they saw herds of cattle and sheep and shepherds taking care of them. So they offered to buy some cattle and sheep with all their money. But the shepherds refused. However, the people from Shevet Ephraim would escape. They're tired, they're hungry, they've been fighting for weeks. So they decided they would take some of the animals by force and we'll leave the money afterwards. The shepherds put up a loud cry. Residents came out from all over the land of Plishtim. They had a big battle. There were heavy casualties on both sides. And the people in Gaza sent out a call throughout the land of the Plishtim. The Jews are threatening us. Come and help us stop them. So the Plishtim sent their army and hurried up to fight the Jews of Shevet Ephraim. They were greatly outnumbered from the people from Shevet Ephraim. Very few of the people from Shevet Ephraim saved themselves. A handful escaped and went back to Egypt. And the Plishtim refused to bury the bodies of the people who had fallen in battle. They were left there, neglected and uncared for. Hundreds of years later, when the prophet Yechezkel will bring back the bones to life in his famous Nevuah of the Valley of the Dry Bones, these are the bones that he will bring back to life. A handful managed to escape and get back to Egypt. And they were told, listen, you shouldn't have done this. But don't worry, when it's time, Hashem will save us. He will fulfill the promise that he made to Yaakov. We're going to look forward to that day. Ephraim at this time was still alive. He was a very, very old man. He had a son, and he named that son Berea, from the word Ra, commemorating what befell his tribe. 30 years later, the Jews left under the leadership of Moshe Rabbeinu. There's a Medrash that says one of the reasons that Hashem did not take the Jews directly across the Midbar, but rather through a sort of circuitous route, is he didn't want them to have to go through the valley where all the dried bones of the tribe of Ephraim were, because he was afraid that seeing that would make them lose heart. Even the people from Shevet Ephraim who stayed behind and didn't go, they still were proud and stubborn, and they felt like they were descendants of Yosef and they were entitled. They ignored Hashem's warning. Why, it says? Because they were armed archers. Noshke Rome Koshes. They knew how to use their bows and arrows. They were proud of their warrior skills. And when they left, they mocked the people who stayed behind. They called them cowards. They said they had a slave mentality. And they called them gullus Jews. Just sitting and waiting for Hashem to save you. We're going to take matters into our own hands. We're not going to be slaves to anybody. We're not going to be gullus Jews anymore. It says in Pasuk, Yud lo shamru bris Elokim. They didn't keep the covenant of Hashem. Uvesayraso me'anu lelechas. They refused to follow his Torah. Vayishkechu alilosav v'niflosav v'she'aram. They forgot his deeds and his wonders. which he had showed them. So the first lesson in history is from Yagnan. Yagnan forgot that in the study of history, Hashem's wonders, and Hashem had always done what he promised. And that if he waited and didn't contradict Hashem's instructions, Hashem would take care of it. Hashem told him to wait until it was time to be redeemed, but he couldn't do that. He was so skillful with his bow and arrow, and so sure that as a descendant of Yosef HaTzadik, he deserved this, and so sure it was the right thing to do, and so sure that he didn't need to carefully study what Hashem said. He knew what Hashem wanted him to do, that he had to pick up and leave. And it ended up in disaster. That's not the first time that Shevet Ephraim in history is going to do that. Shevet Ephraim is going to chafe a little bit under the fact that Yosef was the first Jewish ruler. Who is this David? Should be someone from our Shevet. It seems like what Yagnan did was pretty wild, pretty out there. I mean, my gosh, 30 years is not that long to wait. But he didn't know it was only going to be 30 years. At the time he left, Moshe Rabbeinu had been forced to flee the country. Dathan and Aviram had reported to Paro that Moshe had killed an Egyptian, and Moshe Rabbeinu had been banned from Egypt. And things looked pretty bleak. So to his mind, things looked pretty bleak. Maybe it's time to take matters into our own hand. So the first lesson from history from Asav is not true. It doesn't matter how things look now. Tomorrow they'll be different. Hashem does what he says. Hashem makes a promise. You can count on that, and there's no need to show off your prowess with the bow and arrow and go and take matters into your own hands. Thousands and thousands and thousands of Bnei Ephraim were killed by the Plishtim, and some by Paro. A handful made it back. All because he decided to take matters into his own hand. Okay, we're going to stop on Pasuk 10, Pasuk 11, and next week we're going to pick up Pasuk 12 with our next history lesson in the fields of Tzoan, and we're going to have quite a number of more history lessons. Any questions? So we're going to see as we go through that Asaph is going to build a picture. 72 Pesukim is a lot. Asaph has not been such a lengthy writer. But he's going to build a picture for us of what happens when you don't follow what Hashem wants. And more importantly, when you don't study carefully to determine what Hashem wants. Yagnan was not evil. He was misguided. He really, truly thought he was saving the Jewish people. He really truly thought what he was doing was for the greater good, and that it was a terrific thing he was doing. He thought he was doing a selfless act, and even if he himself got killed in battle, he would go down in history as the time that the Jews managed to break free and go out and serve Hashem. He didn't want to go and serve Avodah Zarah. He wasn't the Rasha. He wanted to leave Mitzrayim and serve Hashem. He wasn't an evil person. It doesn't take too much imagination to come up with comparisons in our own times. People who started reform, people who started the Haskalah, they didn't do it in order to be evil. They did it because they really felt that what they were doing was good for the Jewish people. Nonetheless, says Asaph, they forgot. They did not prepare their heart, and the spirit of what they were doing was not faithful to Hashem. Okay, any questions? I think that we will probably do another, probably two more weeks on this kapitel. The 72 pesukim all together, we'll probably do two more weeks. One other thing that I wanted to mention.